Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Big MX Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Brad Gebhardt, and this episode is brought to you by Racetech Suspension and Engines. Some of the fastest racers on the planet rely on both the engines and the suspension components available through Racetech. You guys can get your hands on it by going to racetech.com. And let them know that Brad Gebhardt at Big MX Radio sent you, and you're going to save some money on your parts and labor. So do exactly that. Save some money with Racetech, and get the chassis feeling that much better. Add some horsepower, maybe some more usable power in your bike, and drop those lap times so that you can improve your finishes, or hell, just get a little bit more throttle therapy. I also want to give a huge shout out to Billy over at Luxon MX. Billy's amazing. If you contact Billy directly and let him know that Big MX Radio sent you, he's going to give you a discount. You have to go find out what that is, but call Billy and find out what kind of discount you can get yourself on a pair of Luxon clamps, or maybe their bar mounts. Maybe it's the chassis components. Maybe it's even the engine hangers. They've got some stuff all over the pits, and some of the top teams are using it. All right, let's get straight into the Anaheim 2 reaction podcast here. Later on in the podcast, we're going to get to my interview with Sawyer Shell, so look forward to that. But let's get through the 250s, the 450s, and also talk about the SMX next. Kicking things off with the 450 classes, get straight to them. And it was Chase Sexton doing exactly what Chase Sexton probably is completely capable of doing. I think it's been well documented on this podcast that I'm a fan of Chase Sexton. I really like some of the things that he had to say in a post race interview with one Lewis Phillips from Vital MX. He had some truth bombs there, and just kind of like a no fucks given attitude that honestly, not really all that surprised to see from a guy who has probably got some millions in the bank and has had a good amount of success already. He's a champion indoors and out. Obviously didn't get a 250 outdoor championship, but has multiple 250 supercross championships, a 450 supercross championship, and a 250 and a 450 outdoor championship. Chase Sexton, at this point in his career, I believe has earned the right to be able to speak his mind, especially when he feels like the powers that be are jerking him around a little bit. But that completely aside, the riding was there for the second weekend in a row. Obviously, slamming into the gate at the beginning of San Diego was not the way Chase Sexton wanted to start off that main event. He ended up finishing it as strong as you possibly could by racing all the way forward. And I believe he was either fourth or third or fourth at San Diego. I have to look. Let me see here. Oh, man, that's not God damn it. That's bad audio. But I can't remember how Sexton did in this San Diego. It feels like forever ago already, though. That is 2 weeks. So honestly, that being said, great night for Chase Sexton. Is he also capable of having another San Diego? Absolutely. But if Chase can have more nights like Anaheim 2 throughout the year, it's going to be bad news for everybody. This was a real show of dominance. He was able to work his way through, and it wasn't a huge gap at the line, 3 seconds, nothing crazy, but 11 seconds on Tomac, 18 seconds on Anderson. And Webb was coming. We'll get to him in a moment here. But I think that Anaheim 2 will later on serve as a race that we look back on in Hunter Lawrence's career as one where he was really able to turn a page. And I think we'll become sort of the springboard of what we can – well, I think what we will see in the weeks and months to come, the years to come as well, an athlete that is extremely talented, able to run at the front, and not intimidated by anybody on the line. And I'm not saying that that's been the case since or up until now, but from his riding, Hunter Lawrence showed us this past Saturday at Anaheim 2 that he knows he can run with absolutely anybody, and that's great to see. I was really encouraged to see, right off the hop, aside from Cooper Webb, you basically had all of your title guys sort of upfront fighting for it. Of course, Ken Roczen goes down early, and not to say that I don't consider him a championship guy. But your heaviest of hitters, your Sexton, your Lawrence, your Tomac, they were all up close to the front of the race right off the hop, which created some great racing. There's a little bit of freight training going on. Jason Anderson led laps for the first time aboard that Suzuki. And may I also just be on record as saying that Jason Anderson just looks so good on a Suzuki. I don't know what the Pipes Motorsports Group has in the water over there, but it's just very fashionable. It's always looking fast. I think it just sort of complements Anderson's style. I think he looks really good on the bike so far. The bike looks good. The gear looks good. And a good start to the season for Jason Anderson is how I'm seeing it right now. And I got a lot of good things to say about how he's riding and would definitely expect him to get a win this season. What's going on? We're going to get to, an interview with Sawyer Shell later on. I am currently live on TikTok as well while I record this, so they won't be able to see that interview. So let's comb through the results a little bit more. Tomac just outside the top two. He's the last spot on the podium. Gotta think that at this point, the maturity is just there for Eli Tomac. Does he want to win races? Absolutely. I think that Lawrence had a little bit, I just think he had a little bit more, even though Eli had a faster lap time. I feel like for whatever reason, it was Hunter, had something under the hood that Tomac didn't have this past weekend in Anaheim, and a third place, leaving a racetrack that hasn't always been kind to Eli, and still retains the number one plate, the red plate moving forward as points leader. It's great to see. And Anderson, top four, like he's had some good rides already this year. And it's encouraging to see because you have more guys that are going to be able to, put some sauce on this championship and make things difficult for guys like Cooper Webb, who rounds out your top five. Now, Cooper Webb is an athlete who thrives on momentum. And although a fifth place, still not where he wants to be, Cooper Webb knows this, is that he was as fast as anyone this last weekend in Anaheim 2. And as we go over towards the east and the racetracks get a little bit softer, that's when Cooper Webb is at his best. And I still think his best rounds are ahead of him in this championship. Cooper Webb, although probably not where he wants to be points-wise in the championship, is in no way, shape, or form hitting the panic button. It's a long championship. We got three rounds so far in of a 31-round world championship, but at least the 17-round Supercross championship is very, very young, and Cooper Webb is looking very, very fast. I want to give a huge shout-out to lead quadlock Honda rider, and that is none other than Joey Savacci. He showed speed in qualifying. He has showed speed in his heat races, the main events. He's shown fitness. Claremont, Florida, is where he's sort of hometowned out of. And I think that's where he calls home today. But I'm just so incredibly proud to see how hard, Joey has worked to be able to be a top six guy in this class, able to run the pace of, Ken Roczen, Hampshire, Cooper, just ahead of Jorge Prado. And it's encouraging to see that he's already had as much success. And he's going to be a thorn in the side of guys like Hampshire, guys like Justin Cooper, Malcolm Stewart, all season long. Of course, him not on a factory deal. Every single one of those guys expects to be ahead of guys like Savacci. So that's pretty neat to see him be able to put the number 17 machine all the way up there. And he is a former winner in the 250 class. He's a win both indoors and out. He's won heat races, if I'm not mistaken, if not very close. So a force to be reckoned with, and certainly the big dog under the tent over at Quadlock Honda. So far, if you had said that Jorge Prado, after three rounds, has two top tens, and a 13th, I would have not been surprised. What I would have been surprised is that one of those top 10s was also a podium, and that in the other top 10, he ended up in front of Ken Roczen, RJ Hampshire, and Justin Cooper. Like, those are the guys that are rounding out your top 10. Those are the four guys in the top 10 behind Jorge Prado, all of which everybody in the know, including myself, expected them to finish in front of Jorge Prado every single round of this championship until we went outdoors. That was the opinion. That was where people's minds were with Jorge Prado. There wasn't a lot of respect being given there, even though he is a multi-time world championship. Of course, that's motocross. This is supercross. Of course, 2025 happened. The quitting, the Kawasaki drama, all of that. But you can't say anything negative, really, about how Jorge's been riding so far. His lap time, 1.8 seconds, or less than that, 1.5 seconds off the fastest lap time of the guy who won the race, fastest lap of the night. He's right in there lap time wise. Is he the most talented guy out there? No. Does he have the best style out there? No. Is he just as fast as a lot of guys out there? Faster lap time in the main event than Justin Cooper. Faster lap time in the main event than Dylan Ferrandis. Both those guys are 250 champions in the sport. And Jorge Prado put in a faster lap time than those guys. And he did so later in the race than they did. I'm not here to just blow smoke up his ass, but like after three rounds, that's a great effort. That is a fantastic effort from him. And like guys like RJ Hampshire, Justin Cooper got to be kind of shaking, scratching their heads a little bit and wondering, to themselves, hey, how do I get in front of that guy? Because that's where those guys should be. That's where I think that RJ Hampshire and Justin Cooper, they should be fighting for top five finishes every single weekend. They have that talent and ability. RJ is a champion. Justin Cooper's a champion in the 250 class. They've won races outdoors. They've won races in Supercross. They've been fastest qualifier or damn close to it in the 450 class. These guys, that just speaks to the depth of the class and the fact that if you happen to get a bad start, it's not going to work out great for you. That's going to be a long day, a long road to hoe. Couple of the notables that I want to bring to attention. Plessinger, I believe he went down, but that was a bike issue, if I'm not mistaken, as to why he didn't end up finishing. Cool to see Brees out there. You got Vince Freese running into fellow Kawasaki rider. I believe he's on the PRMX team, Mitchell Harrison, for 19th. He gets the AMA license points. Like, hand up if you think that Vince Freese is going to max out that program as quickly as possible. I also don't think he gives a shit. I don't think he cares. I don't think it, in the grand scheme of his career, that it matters in any way, shape, or form. The guy is an absolute whack-a-mole, and is capable of absolutely, unworldly atrocities at any moment. And I don't know if that's good for Supercross, but it sure is entertaining every once in a while. Austin Faulkner, 17th, not where he wants to be. Nichols, 16th, not where he wants to be. Even Shane McElrath, 18th, those guys don't want to be back there. But neither do the guys that are in front of them. So, like, we have good racing going on. Things get spread out as they typically do. That's the funny thing they don't really talk about, on the broadcast and in some of the major publications, is that, like, outside of the top 10, you got 10 seconds from Ferrandis to Stewart. You have another 8 seconds from Stewart to Craig. 3 seconds from Marchbanks from Craig to Marchbanks, which is the same distance that Sexton was ahead of Lawrence. Like, that's the exact same amount of time. And at no point did I really think that that Lawrence was like threatening to take that away from Sexton late in the race there. The rest of the guys like are all sort of one lap between, but like, yeah, all of them from Marchbanks to Justin Hill and Colt Nichols, they're all more than a few seconds apart. And I, that does tend to happen in all racing, but motocross and supercross are maybe a little bit more prone to it, is that the guys 10th on back, they kind of find their spot and then they circulate for the last however many laps. Some guys move forward, some guys don't. Really encouraged to see a guy like Christian Craig move up and be nipping at the heels of Stewart. He had a couple of really good laps in there. Still haven't seen the best from Christian Craig this year. That's for damn sure. All right. Now, before we get to the SMX Next Kids, brought to you by, Guts Racing. If you haven't gotten a new Guts seat for this upcoming season, just go ahead and do it. Order the entire seat too, by the way. Seat covers are awesome and all, but they're a pain in the ass to put on. It's really easy to get the Guts ones on. But I myself, if I can swing the expense, and it's always worth having an extra seat, by the way, go get yourself a seat cover and then also buy a complete seat, with that lightweight foam. They're not overly expensive. They're great value. It's a great way to freshen up a bike too. If you bought a used bike, buy a brand new seat for the damn thing. That is a great, you're literally going to straddle your leg over that every time you go ahead and ride it. Guts Racing. But this interview with Sawyer Schell is brought to you by Guts Racing, and thanks to Andy Gregg for always supporting Big MX Radio. Go check those guys out. But this is my interview with Sawyer Schell. And now joining us here on Big MX Radio, his very first time on the podcast. Of course it would be. I only found out about this kid like 3 days ago. Goes by the name of Sawyer Schell, all the way from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Sawyer, how's it going?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Not doing too bad, brother. The world of social media is an amazing place. We go there. A lot of us are spectators. A lot of us are content creators. And every once in a while, we happen to collide in this beautiful space where we're sharing and we're talking about riding our dirt bikes and just getting that throttle therapy. And something that's near and dear to my heart is riding in the snow. Not something that is for the faint of heart whatsoever. You gotta have a couple screws loose to do that. But I think you gotta have a couple screws loose to do that to begin with. So before we get into the nuts and bolts of who Sawyer Schell is, let's talk about the clip that I originally saw on social maybe 2 days ago and how that kind of came to be. It looks like it kind of made some noise here in Canada.
Yeah, honestly, riding in the snow like that, it's sort of just been a normal thing. I've been riding in the snow at the track since I was probably about 4 years old on 50s. We just stud up. It doesn't really feel too much different from dirt. It's honestly just way more inconsistent. It really just depends on the day and the conditions.
Fair enough. I'm sure it can get a little, any hard pack stuff that has some icy spots underneath can probably get a little hairy. But like you said, you stud up. And sun up, nut up, and head out onto the track. So I'm sure there's probably a few people watching currently that are like, who is this kid and why are we listening to it? So your name is Sawyer Schell from Calgary, yeah. Alberta, but that's as far as I know as far as my research and development as far as your history in the sport. So why don't you lay it down for the people at home and let us know why you picked the number 100 aside from the fact that it's dope.
So the main reason I picked 100 is because when I was about 5, I had to pick a number when I was on 50s, and okay, that was the highest number I could count to. So that's just what I decided to pick.
Boom, 100. Yeah, it's a nice round number. It looks good on a bike. And like you said, you're from Alberta. And for those who don't know, like I'm from Manitoba. We get like the harshest version of winter. We're minus 30 a lot. There are a couple of guys who ride locally into the wintertime on dirt, one of which being Josh Penner. I'm sure you're familiar with him. But there is a lot of ice racing, but not a lot of opportunity to ride just because of the harshness of the temperatures. But you're in Calgary where things don't get nearly as cold and they tend to fluctuate. Like I've been at COP skiing when it's like 10 degrees in the middle of January. You can kind of have those ups and downs and stuff like that. So tell me a little bit about, like riding and growing up in Calgary and having a track right inside the city limits, Wild Rose, which is where you were riding, in the clip that we originally picked. And just kind of tell me a little bit about that and then being able to ride there almost year round. Of course, it is Canada, so you're going to have some weekends and some months where maybe it's not viable, but you're able to put knobbies in the dirt more often than not.
Yeah, so pretty much that track, it's right in the middle of the city. It's about 15 minutes from where I live. It's really been a big part of my life. I've been going there almost every day since I was three. And it's really given a lot of opportunities for many people. And I actually work there. I've been working there since I was 13.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, it's sweet. Guys have been riding there since the 60s. But what's really unfortunate is it's probably going to be closing by the end of 2026.
Really? Okay. So yeah, the days may be numbered for those who aren't in the know of all things Canadian moto. There was a story that came out maybe 8-9 months ago about sort of a logistics project that would essentially nullify the track. For those who don't know, Wild Rose MX is located basically in an industrial park in Calgary, Alberta, which allows for some amazing shots. Like, you literally have like a city skyline in the background of a lot of those cool shots that you're able to do. And it's awesome to have a track in the city limits. And the reason why it's allowed to exist in the city limits is it's surrounded by an industrial park where no one's making noise complaints, especially when it's the sweet, sweet sound of dirt bikes. But yeah, 13 years, man, that is, I hate to say it, you're going to look back on this in, like, you've been there for 13 years. In 13 years from now, you're going to look back, you're going to be, you're going to be almost 30 years old, and you'll be 29 years old, and you'll be thinking, man, those were the good times. And yeah, having a track that close to you, especially one as a national caliber like Wild Rose, that's going to be a big loss, but it sounds like you're enjoying it now.
Yeah, it's super sweet. It's just kind of unfortunate because there's no other tracks like that really close to Calgary. You'd have to drive at least an hour, hour and a half to ride some. But yeah, the track's sweet. What's cool is in the summer, it's prepped every day or almost every day.
Oh, wow.
There isn't really any other track like it in Alberta.
No, there isn't even a track like that here in Manitoba. We have Grunthal. They do a Wednesday practice sometimes, a weekend practice, but it's never more than once a week. And having Wild Rose literally in your backyard, it would be huge for you. And that's certainly contributed to some of the skills that you were able to showcase on the motorcycle. When do you think the youngest you were riding in the snow the way you were this last weekend? Because that's pretty different.
So I would have started riding in the snow at the track when I was probably 4 years old on a 50.
Wow.
Obviously, like, I wouldn't be hitting all the jumps on the main track. I was probably
Nor were you wheeling across the tabletops either, probably.
Probably not. When I was probably on 65s when I was hitting most of the jumps on the main track. I was probably about 4 years old. But yeah, we've been riding at the track in the winter as long as I can remember.
That's rad. It's such a really neat community. Maybe you can shed some light on that as well. The Alberta motocross community and the off-road community, I feel like it's more of like I wouldn't say melting pot, but there's like more of a gray area between people who do a lot of both, like doing a lot of trail riding. There's tons of great single track. You guys aren't far from the mountains. But yeah, obviously you're not a stranger from throwing down on the motocross track. Tell me a little bit about doing both disciplines, both off-road and on track.
Yeah, so pretty much most of my racing career so far, until I was about 10, I mainly just did motocross. Mm-hmm. I'd race every local motocross race. Occasionally, we'd go to the U.S. for a few races in B.C. But then in the past couple, and I'd obviously ride off-road a couple times throughout those years, maybe once or twice a year. But it was really in the past 3 years, in 2022 was when I started riding at McLean Creek a lot, which is about 45 minutes from where I am. And that's been pretty good. And then in 2023, I started doing a lot more off-road races. So that's sort of when I did the transition. I'll still race the odd motocross race. One of the main reasons I started riding off-road a lot more is because in the 90s, my dad was really into off-road racing. And then me and him would just ride up McLean Creek all the time together. And that's just how I got into it.
Well, it's a great time to get into it because, like, now, like riding off-road is cool. Like you can let your dad know riding off-road in the 90s was not cool. There was like, they didn't have cool gear. The bikes didn't look cool, like the light on the front and all that. Now it's like, it's stylish and there's some like you can have some serious swag out there on the trails. Back in the day, like it was Guy Perrier. That's way before your time. But like the old school guys, they weren't looking too hot as far as like the old MSR gear and stuff like that. Now you can be lit kit all day long, which you are with, the Troy Lee head to toe. Stoked to see you on a brand that's actually growing here in Canada. Yeah. Like obviously it's been popular for a long time, but a lot of people have been wearing Troy Lee and you're one of them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty sweet. Honestly, I don't think off-road from the 90s was that bad. I mean,
I guess
most of them would race on...
Unfair road. Criticism, I getcha.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's pretty sweet. I feel like most of the people I know kind of do one or the other.
Okay.
But in Alberta, in the past couple of years, there's this Sprint Enduro series that mm-hmm. they just started. And that sort of opened the door for a lot of moto guys to start doing some more off-road. Just this year, like, quite a few of the local pros I know from the track did a couple of the Sprint Enduros, and they're kind of getting more into the off-road community. So that's
right. Cool. It's nice to see a little bit of that crossover. So for you, and then and this is why I often try and like make the pre-interview conversation as short as it can be, so we don't lose any of the amazing nuggets that could have possibly end up in the podcast. And yeah. You mentioned something that really was music to my ears, and the fact that I noticed that you have no problem getting the bike to 12 o'clock pretty much at will, even if there happens to be snow on the ground. How'd you make that happen?
Being able to wheelie, well, just pretty much every time I ride, before I leave, I just do about 5 or so wheelies, and over the course of a couple of years, you just kind of develop the feeling. But I have looped out pretty bad a couple of times, like in this summer at one of the Sprint Enduro races. In between tests, I was kind of cocking, I was like showing off, I was wheeling through the pits, and I looped out pretty bad, like in front of everyone.
Broken subframe, back fender. What was the parts bill on a embarrassing mistake like that?
I just broke my rear fender and hurt my tailbone pretty bad.
Oh, okay. Well, like, hey, tailbones heal and back fenders are cheap. Well, actually, no, they're not. But if you looked at OEM plastics for KTMs, those are not cheap. But like, yeah, as I mentioned, you're a KTM guy. And also, is that a 252 stroke or a 300?
Oh, that's a 252 stroke.
Okay. So like, how does a 16-year-old end up on a 252 stroke? That's a serious bike for a young man.
Yeah. Really just been working my way up over the years. Like in 2023, I got my first 150, like my first big bike. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I got a 125, and my dad had a 252 stroke at the time. I'd ride quite a bit. And then I just got a 252 stroke at the end of that year.
There you go. So once you had some time on dad's 252 stroke, you're like, yeah, I can ride this thing.
I've gone through a couple since then.
Fair enough. Well, it looks like you get a lot of seat time, so wearing out bikes is definitely part of that program. What does the 2026 riding season look like for you? I know you'd mentioned you work at Wild Rose. That's super sick. You'll do some off-road racing. You'll also do some motocross racing. What are some key events that you're looking to hit?
Yeah, so this summer, I haven't really developed too much of a schedule yet. I'm for sure going to do, like, the local off-road series, like, ASA, Second Gear Club, NSOR. One of my races that I'm probably going to do this year are the Calgary Nationals, the motocross race, because it's going to be the last year that they have it there. It's just a race I've always wanted to do, so I might as well go and do that race. And then, I don't know, I'm trying to look out to get to a couple hard enduros maybe this year. Last year I did Outliers, which is my first real hard enduro, out kind of by Brooks in Alberta.
Mm-hmm.
It was a sweet race. It was a Red Bull sanctioned event, and there's some of the best guys there, like Tristan Hart was there. He's a guy I really look up to. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I don't really know. I'm just going to mainly do the local races and see where I go from there.
So who's in the local crew? Who's the usual suspects that you're riding with, heading to the track with? I don't know if you have any bitter rivals, but if you did, who would they be?
No, I don't really have many rivals. I just have quite a few buddies I have. I go to the track with, like, Wyatt Hassel's one of my good friends I go to the track with all the time.
Yeah, familiar with him.
Yeah, me and him grew up together. We always
Okay.
were at the track together every day as long as I can remember.
He rode my 300 two-stroke when he came out to Manitoba to come grab a KTM 450.
Yeah, that's sweet.
Yeah,
That's sweet.
awesome. And so who else do you normally run with?
He's the main guy. The main guy I ride with, other than Wyatt, is when I go to the when I ride off road, I just ride with my dad all the time.
Okay.
We didn't go out too much this year, but the past couple years we'd go to McLean Creek almost every day. So it's pretty sweet having him as a riding buddy. He's really done a lot for me, and I really appreciate him.
So tell me a little bit about McLean Creek. I've never been. It's something you're obviously able to share with your old man. That's maybe my favorite thing about the sport of motocross is the fact that you can create such an amazing bond over something you're so passionate about. You can share that with your loved ones, whether it's a father, son, mother, daughter, whatever it happens to be. And it sounds like you've got just an absolute like deluge of memories that you could possibly draw upon from stuff like that, and obviously built a really strong bond with your old man. That's pretty solid.
Yeah, so McLean Creek, I don't really know when they started riding there, but my dad kind of rode there a lot in the 90s.
Okay.
And when I was younger, he just started taking me there. We wouldn't really go too often at first, maybe just a couple times a year. But then as I got older and kind of got more capable on the bike, he could start showing me a lot more cool trails. And it's just sweet. There's just endless trails out there. I've probably only ridden about like 50% of them. There's just so much terrain out there. It's sweet.
That's super dope. At what point did we pass Dad and leave him in our dust, or have we not yet?
He's still pretty fast. He could keep up to me in short segments, but I think I got him on the hill climbs for sure.
Okay, for sure. Especially if 16 years old, maybe 150 pounds soaking wet on a KTM 252 stroke. Yeah, you're probably going pretty good there. If it's moto and you can't see Wild Rose, what is like the best track in Alberta?
Other than Wild Rose, I don't really know because they all kind of have their benefits. One of the tracks that a lot of people like is the Lethbridge track, Raymond.
Right.
There's a lot of big jumps. The only downfall is it's always really windy there, so it's just kind of sketchy when you want to hit the big jumps.
Fair enough. And you literally have bit sketchy in your Instagram bio. So if you're a bit sketchy and the track's a bit sketchy, I don't necessarily think that's a good combo.
Not necessarily, no.
Fair enough. Fair enough. So where would you like to take, where do you foresee yourself, within the sport of motocross? Where would you like to take it? Is it a hobby for life? What's the deal between you and, two-wheel exhilaration, when it comes to the future of it?
Well, my main goal for my whole life has always just been to race on the professional level. I just want to
Okay.
race. Like, one of the guys I really look up to is Tristan Hart. He's from Invermere.
Okay.
I've been lucky and I've gotten to ride with him at the track a decent amount of times. He's a really cool guy. I just want to race pro. I don't really know how else to say it.
Yeah. Hey, well, like that is a goal, man. To be able to line up for a professional race, regardless of how many people are in the stands, regardless of the depth of the field or what the track is, to be able to line up with those guys, the guys who do it for a living, and to be able to hang in there with them for even a few corners or even be able to be on the same track at the very same time, you immediately put yourself in maybe the top 5% of people who get to throw a leg over a dirt bike, period, of everdom. And to be able to say you did that, whether you do it one time or 100 times, you still become part of that fraternity. And yeah, it's super neat to be able to also like have that goal, get to it one day. And also I'd imagine if you've been around for as long as you have, you probably at this point already have some youngsters that are looking up to you.
Yeah, I like to think that. I don't know. You obviously want to be a good example, a good role model, but my goal is just to try to see how far I can take it, I guess.
Fair enough. Yeah, that's a great attitude, man. It seems like you've got a good head on your shoulders, good moral compass when it comes to this whole thing, and you're having a lot of fun on the dirt bike. How many times do you ride during the week?
During the week. So in the summer, I ride every day. I work at the track, usually on weekday. I work until 4, and then I got off work. I have a van, so I just keep my bike in the back of my van and ride right after work at the track. And then in the winter, usually about once, meet to like twice a week. You can't really ride as often because on weeknights it just gets dark so early.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
I do everything I can to get as much seat time as possible.
Yeah, no doubt. For those who don't know, it does get dark around like 4:30, 5 o'clock in December and January. So that can make evening rides a little bit more difficult. But that's really interesting, man. I'm super glad that we were able to connect, and people really seem to enjoy the video that you had shared. And I just wanted to share it with the rest of my audience, because I'm sure very few people who follow me know that people have no problem studding up the tires and spinning some laps at Wild Rose. That's one of the questions I wanted to ask you is what's bumping on in your van? What's the music you got bumping on the way to the track when you're looking to have a good riding day?
It really just depends what mood I'm in. A lot of like alternative I listen to lately. That's kind of been the main thing. Like a lot of Offspring, some Censor. It really depends. I also have a sub in my van, so it bumps a lot of rap. Could go good on it as well.
Okay. Give me one rap song that I'm gonna add to my workout playlist for the end of January here.
Okay, let me think. I'm.
I put you on the spot. I apologize.
Just trying to think. I can't think.
Fuck. This is great. This is great radio.
Forgot About Dre. That's a good one.
Forgot About Dre. That one's currently not on my playlist, so I will go ahead and add it. They call you Shell Boy. Who calls you Shell Boy? Is that a self-given nickname?
It's kind of been like a self-given nickname.
Okay.
But now, since my Instagram's been named as that, a lot of people around the track have just been calling me that over the past few years.
Fair enough. Well, I think it's dope. I think for those who are not already following at Shellboy, you guys absolutely have to. The kid's putting out really, really neat, very sort of heartfelt stuff that, like, I feel like there's a lot of passion behind your riding. You just, like, you're just soul riding out there. Like, rarely much graphics on the dirt bike, gear that looks like you spend a lot of time in it and that you're, like, just enjoying your stuff. Like, there's a rawness to your approach to the sport that I think is really healthy. And I think it's a great example for, young athletes. Regardless of their goals in this sport, I think their goal should be to enjoy it to the fullest, and you certainly do that. So that's exactly why I wanted to have you on.
Yes, sweet. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Of course, man. And if it ever comes to be that we need to have you on again, I'm sure now I have your email address, so we can do any of these anytime. I really appreciate you making the time for this, and I wish you the best of luck, not only with 2026 riding season, but as many laps as you could possibly pound at Wild Rose until they shut the gates on that thing.
Yes, sweet. Thanks again for having me. I really can't wait till we can do it again.
Awesome. Sawyer Shell here on the Big MX Radio Podcast, my friend. Before I let you go here on the show, I know you've got some sponsors, some people to help you out. Give them a little bit of give some love here on the podcast, and then we'll say goodnight for the night.
Yeah, I'd really like to thank Barnes Power Sports or Blackfoot Motorsports. I'd really like to thank Reynolds Brothers Racing and Jeff Reynolds for his help on our suspension. And I'd just like to thank, honestly, the whole moto community and off-road community. The sport really wouldn't be the same without you guys.
That's very well spoken, my friend. You have yourself a great rest of your evening. Don't hang up just yet. But for podcast sake, we're going to cut things off right there. And McAdoo, we're rounding out your top six. Hymus, he's got a DNF already here. Kitchen has a DNF. And really quickly, the depth of the 250 West sort of starts to peter off a little bit. So far, like some, like a 10th, a 9th, and an 11th from Dylan Schwartz. It hasn't really been threatening. Mumford has been getting better every weekend, so to speak, with like an 11, 14, 8. So he's ramping up. But like that's the remainder of the top 10. None of those guys, I hate to say it, none of them really scare you as far as like, being a threat to be a top five guy. In fact, like, Schwartz only has one, result inside the top 10. Of course, he has also has a 10. So he has two tenths, like a two top tens and an 11th. So he's right on the cusp, but at, like that doesn't, make me think that he's all of a sudden going to, rattle off some top five finishes. Not to besmirch the good name of Dylan Schwartz. He's a great athlete in his own right. But now we have, Cameron McAdoo that has a DNF. You have Hymus that has a DNF. You have, Kitchen that has a DNF. And Yoder has a DNF as well. Like you have four guys in the top 12 that all have a DNF. So like the point spread is getting quite big. Like even there's 10 points that separate the top 10, but seventh is over 30 points back. And that's, the math is not kind to guys that are more than 40 points back of, for the championship. Like Levi Kitchen is now, 33 points back after three rounds. Hate to say it, championship's probably done. Not to say that there's nothing to race for. He's gonna go out there and give his best and win some races potentially. But the championship, he would need to have something break his way. And the way Hayden Deegan is riding right now, doesn't look like he's gonna give it up. He's sitting on a 4-1-1. And, if had the first round, gone a little better for him, he'd be looking at an even bigger points lead, looking at currently at 9 points. I don't think there's a lot of people who think that Michael Mosman, who's currently second in points, is really like a serious challenger for this championship. Michael might disagree. And if you disagree with that, Michael, I apologize. It's just my opinion. Anstey, I think he is absolutely a contender for this championship. 10 points down is not going to help. Ryder DeFrancisco, is he a challenger for this championship? I'm sure that Ryder would probably say yes. And for the fact that he has two podiums and a seventh so far in this round, fourth in points, he could certainly win this championship, but he's going to have to win some races in order to do so. Other notables that I really liked their riding from this last weekend, guys like Parker Ross and Hunter Yoder both showed a lot of speed. Josh Varese has gotten better every single weekend so far. He ends up just out like on the last spot of the top 10, this last round, currently 14th in points. Lux Turner with like half, basically he's racing with one arm, is 15th in points. Really like to see that. I gotta get Crockett Myers on the podcast. He did not make the main in San Diego, but a 13th on a Suzuki is not too shabby. So we might have to call up, Crockett Myers after, the Texas round here in Houston and check things out. I wonder if they have entry lists yet. Oh, only the provisional, entry list. Okay. 450s, SMX and NAC. So you got, it's all the same kids. Johnson's in there. You got Fapani. You have Wyatt Thurman, Kane Valasina, Cannon Hargrove. I guess he was not in, that's a Texan. He's on a Suzuki. He was not at the first round, although some of these guys may have been at the first round, but they didn't qualify. You have Riley Bussey, from, I believe that's Wisconsin, New Berlin, Wisconsin. Franklin Bauscher. I don't know who he is. And they also have Jessen Turner Jr. Club's got some guys. Do they still have, they don't have, where's the other, Yamaha guy? No, yeah. So no, I'm blanking on his name. No Max Shane And no Malinowski, obviously. 450 class. We have any we have Luke Dickey from Texas. Dickey, sponsored by Dickey Racing. He's lining up this weekend on a Suzuki. Good luck to him. That would be rad. John Short showing up. He's also racing for Short Racing. I think it's cool just the fact that like he very well could make the main event. Like John Short is absolutely capable of doing that. Yeah, so that's the podcast, guys. Everyone go check out the sponsors for Big MX Radio. I want to thank Moose Racing for making this podcast possible. They're amazing. Race Winning Brands. And for those who don't know who the Race Winning Brands are, it's Recluse. It's Pro-X. It's Wiseco. It's JE Pistons. You can save with Big MX Radio if you make an order through Race Ring Brands. If you contact, Race Ring Brands, whether you're in Canada or the US, mention Big MX Radio and you're going to save yourself some money. They've got OEM quality for parts that do not break the bank. Please go check them out. Thank you guys so much for watching this podcast. As always, like, subscribe, share with someone that you think may enjoy this podcast as well. I appreciate everyone who takes the time to listen to these podcasts or watch them on YouTube. Would love if you guys, left me a comment just telling me where you're at and, what you thought of the show, what I can improve, what I can work on, or what guests you'd like to see me bring on. Obviously I'd love to have, Ricky Carmichael on at some point. Love to have Jeremy McGrath on at some point. Although I did, host a show with Jeremy McGrath at, Toyota Escondido, back in 2017, but he's never been on this podcast. So maybe one day soon, but all right. You guys have yourselves a great rest of your night. Thanks for watching.